Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be giving you ideas for great games to give as gifts for the holidays.
Also, Spencer's here.
I apologize. I am reading the notes exactly as they are. It has no space for Spencer.
No.
We have no space for Spencer.
But first...
I just squeeze my way in. There doesn't have to be room.
Let's go off topic for some news announcements and feedback.
Yeah, so I think the biggest announcement is eventually we'll have Spencer, in the intro maybe.
Right.
But at least not interrupting the intro.
Sure, no, yeah.
We'll see how that works.
I quite liked it.
Yeah, no, I think it works fine.
Yeah.
It lets people know it's live every time.
That's true.
It's not pre-canned.
We're rough around the edges.
Yeah. It's just...
I thought that's what my job was.
To make us more rough around the edges. That
yeah.
Is,
yeah. I mean, that's just what I do everywhere I go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The chaos player strikes again.
Yeah.
Drag the class factor down a little bit.
We used to be a good podcast. Yeah. And then we invited Spencer.
And now it's a great podcast.
Yes, indeed. We'll put a quiz up. Speaking of quizzes, we're not going to put a quiz up. We like Spencer. Contest. You have until December 18th. So if this is your first episode, welcome. If this is not your first episode and you listened to the last episode, then you already know this. But we are running a holiday contest, a giveaway of sorts. Really,
it's exciting.
It is. Really, it's a social media push that we're trying to do. And we're using it as an excuse
to
give away
our secrets.
That's less exciting.
Less exciting. But I have a box of games now. There's 4 games in this box. The box is ready. Wrap it up. Ooh. Ship it out to the winner. Mm-hmm. Here's how you enter. You send us an email to tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. All that really is doing is saying, hey, put me in this entry. Then that'll give you an automatic entry. Then if you share on our Facebook on Facebook or Twitter, you'll get an additional entry. If you retweet if you like, you get one entry. If you retweet or share, you get 3 additional entries.
Ooh.
And the mother of them all, if you leave us an iTunes review, that's 5 additional entries.
Wow.
That's so, a lot of entries opportunities.
On December 18th, I will have all of these in a spreadsheet. I will have a random number generator go through and pick a column or a row in that spreadsheet, and that's how we'll decide who wins. We will do it live on the show.
It's high tech.
Yep.
Drum rolls and everything.
Are we going to actually have a drum set?
I'll add a drum sound to the soundboard.
Nice. Oh, yeah. We don't have to actually have drums.
No, we don't need drums.
This isn't the 1930s. We don't have somebody with, pretend shoes walking down the plank.
Although, that might add some more class if we had a live band.
Oh,
we should think about
could hire the guys that do Mariano's in the wine bar.
Oh, yes, we could.
Yeah. We could just record there.
For those who don't know, Mariano's is a really, swanky grocery store in Chicago where you have, pianists and cello players as you're drinking your wine and buying produce. It's a great place.
It's awesome.
But yeah, so we'll do the recording on December 18th, the drawing on December 18th. I will let you know right after that. So if you've won, you will know by the evening of December 18th. The podcast will drop on December 20th, so everyone else will know. And if all goes well and you're somewhere in the continental U.S., you will receive this hopefully by the end of the week. So by the 24th-ish.
And what's the rough monetary value of all the games that you're giving?
If you go retail, the monetary value is, let's see. So I'll just tell you what the games are.
Oh,
we know the games
now. We know the games.
Exciting.
So Seafall, which is one of the big games. The Seafall.
You're giving away Seafall?
I'm giving a sealed copy. I bought 2 copies.
Oh.
So I have a sealed copy.
I was going to say, I haven't even played that game yet.
Yeah. We talk a lot about Pandemic Legacy. This is his next game. It's a legacy game. He designed it himself. It's more of a Euro-style game. And it's not co-op. It's a competitive legacy game. But that game retails for somewhere around, I think, $80 or so. So that's Seafall. The next one we're giving away is The Duke, which was a game I bought 2 of because I wanted to play it so badly that I forgot I already owned it and bought another one. Have since played it. Josh and I have played it. It's a really good game. So that will be in there. I think that retails around $30.
Yep.
Then the next one is The Resistance Avalon, which also retails around $30 or so. And then finally, we are giving away the copy of Pandemic that the 4 of us played for the first time for our co-op show. So that one, since it's already open, we're going to sign the board just because, not because we're cool in
you
any way.
You can't stop us.
Yeah. We have it. We're going to write our name on it and awesome. Send that to you.
That's plus, a whole lot of, yeah.
And it doesn't stop there.
It doesn't stop there?
No. And more. You're going to get a one-of-a-kind crocheted monster made by me.
That's awesome.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You make some pretty cool monsters, too.
Now, I will say that, a couple of these games, our topic today is games you should give up for the holidays, and a couple of these games do apply. Mm. Seafall is probably not, but we'll get into that in a little bit. First, though, we have gotten some feedback, and Kitty, you want to read our first comment?
Sure. We have a comment on our website from Zoya. She says, love the show, guys. Great work. I listen every week to see what my next game purchase should be. I really look forward to hearing more about Pandemic Legacy. Yep. And let me tell you, Zoya, we do too. We're so excited for that one.
and that was a post on our website directly. So it was a comment to it was 2 weeks episode, 2 weeks ago, that episode. She has since left us a really, really nice iTunes review. So thank you for that. It was a great iTunes review.
Oh, amazing.
And a reoccurring commenter.
Oh, yeah.
Josh.
From Andrew from Gaia Game Studio says, hello again, Chris. Wanted to write back since I got all caught up. I'm really flattered you guys decided to theme the most recent episode based on my feedback.
So this episode would be the episode about game types and game groups and player types.
Right. Mm-hmm. That one. And also, I didn't realize how much I like the word quite, which has an interesting word the more I think about it, as it feels quite unnecessary and easily replaceable in all of its uses.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure this is directly related to, pointed to you, Josh.
Mm-hmm. Are you sure?
Quite sure.
So do you guys not say quite?
Not as often as you do.
Yeah. That's quite interesting.
quite indeed.
Yeah. The contest you guys are putting on is a really cool idea.
It's quite a contest.
It is. And he'll definitely throw in a few entries in. I hope it brings a few new people into the mix. I'd like to throw a couple of suggestions at you. Take them or leave them. It's all good. First, I think it'd be fun if you guys set up a couple of cameras and maybe did a live stream or recording one day a week playing a game of the week type of deal. So, or more or less casually pressure-wise, playing whatever you guys feel like. Pandemic Legacy, for example. That would be cool.
Yeah.
It'd be fun as a fan of the podcast to see how the group interacts during gameplay and it'd grab attention from a different crowd that would like who liked the podcast but hasn't heard of it yet.
Yeah. So I like this idea. I don't know that we could do it every single week.
Sure.
I do want to do it like once or twice, maybe once a month or something would be cool. I was thinking our first one would be like the finale of Pandemic Legacy, but if that was the first video we did, and watch the Tabletop Game Talk YouTube channel and we'll spoil Pandemic Legacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we'll probably find something. I do have a YouTube channel already reserved, made up. The first video I want to put on there is how to play Homeworlds because we talk about it so much. It'd be worth figuring out. Kitty just gave me a look that she does not want to be involved
in
that video.
I'll just be dying in the background of that video.
So it's going to be me and you playing, basically.
Right. But I do think, because we just played a game today, and that would be a three-hour tour of a game. So we have to find the right kind of games to do for this.
Sure.
All right. That was my second interruption. Continue on.
Anytime. Last suggestion. I'd be surprised if you hadn't thought of trying yet. If you guys ever get itching for a new project, I think you should all create a board or card game together. It also works to create some new topics and experiences from the other side of the fence for you all, which could make for some extra interesting discussions on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, we have talked about, I think it was an edible, collectible deck building game, right?
It was something along those lines. Yeah.
But I like this idea as well. Like I consider myself a game designer. I've been doing it a lot, mostly in the video game genre, but I've been doing some stuff, kind of toying around with it. So I have some ideas and I might throw something together and have you guys, play it out. We'll give you periodic updates, but I think this is a good suggestion.
I really like that suggestion. I'm looking forward to playtesting some ideas you come up with.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of PSs here.
P.S. I want to note the co-op episode 9. I had issues playing it on my phone. Through the website, it works just fine. But for some reason, when I download it on my phone, it had the audio issue you mentioned next episode. So you may want to put a note on that page for reference. He had a Galaxy S2.
Yep. So Andrew was one of the early subscribers, so he got this downloaded, the basically the night that we posted this bad file. So my guess is that the file just didn't get re-downloaded.
Yeah.
We updated it.
Sure.
I have tested it since. It does seem good. So if you have, if you noted episode 9 was a little bit, you didn't hear me. Yes, it was a better episode because you couldn't hear me, but.
Oh, I know I liked it.
He got in there before we could. Damn it.
But it should be fixed now, so we should be all good.
Okay, and then the last PPS. No need to read this one on the show, but if you want to, feel free to summarize instead.
Yeah, I want to set a precedent that you send us feedback, we will read it.
Yeah, definitely.
As long as it's constructive in some way, I think it's great. Like, that's how you build a community.
Definitely. So,
yes. All right, any other comments on or any feedback you guys have gotten in person or anything?
None of them yet.
All right. No. Well, actually, I want to segue before. So the new games and Kickstarters, no new games or Kickstarters this week.
What has happened, Chris? Has there been an intervention held?
There's been an American holiday called Thanksgiving. Right. And even though there was Black Friday, I still did not buy games on Black Friday.
That blows my mind.
Do you normally?
Yeah. Not normally on Black Friday, no.
It seems more like a Cyber Monday kind of
thing. Mm. Yeah, so I may make up for that this coming week. But how were you guys' Thanksgivings? Josh, this was your first American Thanksgiving, right?
My first American Thanksgiving. It was really traditional, like big turkey, all the trimmings. Oh, man. I was so full and I had a nap and everything. But yeah, great to hang out with family and like play some games. It was cool.
I heard that you weren't allowed to leave the house the following 2 days later until you finished all the leftover turkey.
Yep. There was still half the turkey left. And I conquered that turkey. There was none left. It was great.
What about you guys, Kitty Spencer?
We were at my parents' house this year for Thanksgiving. It was very nice. Sorry if you can hear our dog Riker in the background. He's being a bit of a nuisance today, guys. He was a bit of a nuisance on Thanksgiving, too. So nothing new here.
Awesome.
Yeah, we had a great time. Thanksgiving's my favorite holiday. I really love it.
Is it because there's now 3 football games on Thanksgiving Day?
No. But I like it because it's really low key.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you're not hosting. I've never hosted a Thanksgiving, right? Yeah. So maybe my attitude will change when I get to that, you know, sort of stage in life. But for now, you know, you just kind of show up and eat with your family. Mm. You watch football and just sort of relax. It's just serious enough as a holiday to really taken seriously, but it doesn't have too much of the extra stresses going on.
Yeah.
Yep. I actually seek out all the extra, like, because my day-to-day life is, you know, relatively spent with adults and people that don't run around and scream at the top of their lungs and stuff. But my holiday family, I go to every year for Christmas and Thanksgiving. I call them my holiday family because I'm not related to them in any way, shape, or form, but they've kind of adopted me. So for the past almost 20 years now, I've been going to their place. They have 17 grandkids, ranging from, you know, just under a year old to 19 years old.
Whoa.
So it's always fun to like hang out with this group of like the energy level is just so high.
Yeah.
It's a really just a great time. And this year I brought, of course I brought games with me.
Yeah.
But one of the things that's tricky is this not really a game playing family. Mm. Like the family itself is more into like sports and things like this.
Sure.
So when you pull out a board game, you don't really have a lot of focus on the board game because there's other like footballs going on all Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Plus there's a lot of little kids running around. Right. So you can't really pull out a really big, heavy game to play. So I brought Pyramid Arcade with me. And as like the 3-year-olds are stacking up the pyramids, you know, some of the like older kids and some of the adults, we were playing different, like pretty quick and easy games to play.
Yep.
So it actually worked out as a really good game to play in that particular group.
Yeah, I bet. So. Yeah, there's lots of games that you can play with just that one box. And they're all like very quick, easy, few rules. Yeah.
Yep.
Makes sense. So
if you can teach a game in like 3 rules, perfect. Mm. Which again, will get us into our main topic. But first, before we do that, our game of today.
Indeed.
Josh, what did we play?
We played, drum roll please.
Whoa, when are we going to drum set?
Terraforming Mars. I was so excited about playing this game because I am a Mars nut. And I was just like, oh my God, it's Mars themed. It's going to be so cool. Maybe Elon Musk will be in there.
Yeah, it was interesting to learn about the history of how we managed to terraform Mars. You know, it was such an important event in human history.
Yeah.
I didn't know that dogs played such an important role.
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah. So the group, it was the four of us. And then my fiance Sydney played. So for those who are new, we have Josh, Kitty, and I are kind of like, you know, we're always talking. We're always talking about our significant others. Mm. It's Kitty and Spencer, which, you know, so Spencer's joining
Hi,
us.
That's me.
Yep. I'm that guy. Josh and Gloria and Chris and Sydney. So terraforming Mars was with five players. Sydney's main way of winning the game was collecting puppies.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty incredible.
That's how she beat me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was close, too. Yeah.
And she did win the game.
Yeah. She did. So I thought I was going to win. Everyone was telling me I was in the lead, but you know, it's one of these point salad games, so you never really know. And it was not me, not by a long way. I came dead last.
You had a shot there.
I did.
Did you have fun?
I did. Yes, it's true.
Then you're the real winner.
That's my favorite part about games is like you never feel like you're out of the game until like the very last moment.
I felt
where
like
you're
I
adding
was,
up the points.
I felt like I was out of that game,
but you weren't really.
Yeah, but I felt like it, which to me, that's worse.
I guess, maybe.
Like, it'd be better to think that I have it and at the end be really disappointed than go like, this is just, I don't have any shot at this.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I will say during the game, I had no idea who was doing well and who wasn't. I was just kind of focused on like, okay, I'm trying to make this work and we'll see what happens. But I think a lot of point salad games are like that because you really just don't know. But
they're just cubes everywhere.
Yeah.
All over the table, many colors, shininess levels.
The box says 90 to 120 minutes.
It took us, what, 3 hours to play?
3 hours. I think three and a half total, but a half hour we'll credit towards learning the game.
Yeah.
But it took us.
I actually think it would have only been about maybe 2 hours max if we had all played before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think if we sat down right now and played, we could do it in 2 hours. Mm. And we played five people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that slows things down a little bit.
Also, it takes Josh 10 minutes longer than the normal player to take his turn.
I was doing really well in that game of just like taking a turn. And yeah, okay, there were some times it took a bit longer. But I was just like, I'm going to take a turn really quickly and let someone else go. Because otherwise I'm going to get hammered for this, as usual.
It's just so easy.
I know.
Well, it does this thing where it actually makes it so even when it's not your turn, you can plan your next turn pretty easily.
Yeah.
So there is some interaction between the players. A player could maybe go in a space that you wanted to go in or something like that. But it felt like it was relatively uncommon that the two or three players that went before me were blocking the thing I wanted to do. So the game allows you to take one or two actions on your turn, and then you keep going around until everyone stops taking actions. And then that's the end of the round, and they call it a generation. And then you produce resources, everyone gets four cards, you can purchase those cards, and what you don't want, you discard. So a lot of the game is simultaneous, except for the action parts, but the action parts are fairly fast. So I thought it moved along quite quickly. I wasn't really bored at any given point.
No.
And most of the game I'm like thinking like, wow, I really like this game. I have no idea who's going to win right now, but I really like this game. I like the idea of what I can do and stuff. I don't know. What did you guys feel about it?
I really liked it once I got into it. It was that classic point salad thing for me personally. I found it really hard to get to grips with all the different rules, all the different things I need to be paying attention to, all the different cards I have in front of me that do different things. And so that's tough. Once I get into that, I'm like, oh man, this is great. I know exactly what I'm doing and it's moving quickly. So yeah, I got into it. Second half was great.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really intuitive game to pick up personally. Once we got through kind of like the tricky setup mechanics, all of the cards you have in your hand tell you exactly what they do in text. So like you can sit. And yeah, we played the beginner version where you have a lot of cards in your hand at the beginning. But I can imagine when you don't have 16-ish cards you're looking at that you can make your decisions a lot faster at the beginning. It was just a lot of text to go through initially. But once you read what was on all the cards, you kind of knew and you could like sort through like, all right, I can't do these actions yet. There's not the conditions met. So I just set those ones to the side until the conditions were met. And then I had a more reasonable hand size that really made a lot of sense. And I kept getting a lot of cards that really fed into each other. I was kind of building a little like forestry green plant building machine over by me, and I liked it. I had a lot of fun.
What did you think, Spencer?
I liked it. I'm not usually partial to point salad games, but I think for a point salad game, it I found it pretty enjoyable. I agree that the large hand size was kind of overwhelming at the beginning, but I also think that's exactly why they set that up that way, because the complex elements of the game really come from what's out there in the deck.
Right.
Right. You can, if you sat down and studied the rule book or somebody really explained it to you, or you just kind of wing it for the first couple of rounds, you're going to pick that up. But in terms of putting together a useful strategy, it's not really possible unless you know what the odds are that something's going to come up and how things are going to play into each other. And I can see, having finished a game now, how different strategies can play off of or against each other.
Right. Mm.
And so you might want to consider that, but you need all of that knowledge of what's in the deck before you can do that.
Yeah. Well, and it was interesting because the beginner corporation, so the game opens up with, there's an advanced icon on a number of cards that you can remove, which is about a quarter of the deck. And then you have corporation cards, which when you're not playing the beginner corporations, you then draft these corporation cards, which kind of give you a strategy that you can play towards. Mm-hmm. But the beginning corporation cards say you get 42 monies, mega credits, but we're just calling them monies, 42 monies and 10 cards on your first turn, which meant you were overwhelmed with cards. But at the same time, like the normal turns are you pick four cards and you can buy cards. But if this is your first game, it may be better to just have a whole bunch of cards so you can see all those options. But it did make the first couple rounds relatively slow as we're trying to figure out what all these cards do and how they can play in with each other.
So it also tricked me because in my 16-card starter hand, I had a few different microbe cards. And I played one where, like, if I randomly picked the top card of the deck, I got to look at it. And if it had microbes, I got 3 victory points. And I was like, oh, I've got a bunch of these microbe cards. They must come up pretty frequently. Nope. Never got it. Never got those points.
And that 3 points would have won you the game.
It would have won me the game.
Yep.
If only.
Yep.
And that one I can blame on the universe, which is not as satisfying, I gotta say, as blaming it on Spencer for poaching all my animals.
Yeah. So it came out to a tie between Kitty and Sydney. And the tiebreaker was whoever had the most mega credits left over, and so Sydney just eked out the victory.
I had no money.
No money over Kitty's side. Just all about forest. Spending all the money on the forest. So, all right. Well, let's go on topic and see what we have to talk about.
In this episode, we're talking about holiday gift ideas. Holiday game gift ideas, that is. What a better gift than one you can share with the person you give it to? Nothing. That's what we think. We'll talk about game ideas for all ages and types of people in the hope that of making everyone's holidays a little more fun.
Yes. So it is the holiday season.
It is.
Thanksgiving will do these things where it's like, I want to play games with my family.
Yeah.
But I have to be very careful what games I can play with my family. I also have to be careful what games I can give my family where they don't think I'm just giving them a game that I'm going to play, such as, was it, and I'm going to date myself here, but Married with Children, where you give the bowling ball with your own initials on it.
right. That was such a great show. It was a great show.
But it applies to everything. So really what we're talking about today is, what are we doing with our family? Do we have a family that's really into board games? What kind of games there? Do we have a family that's not really into games, but, we figure if we throw games at them, that'll make the day go by better, more fun.
The right kind of games.
The right kind of games.
Or hand the games to them.
Or hand the games to
them. You don't necessarily have to throw them at them.
Right.
Here it's more fun that way.
Yes.
I agree. Yeah. But it's probably not going to
avoid confrontation. My siblings aren't great at ducking.
Well, one of the great things about giving a game is it's normally in a nice square box that you can wrap up nicely.
So easy to wrap.
Yeah.
Very easy to wrap.
Yep. And it shakes well. When you shake, it's like, oh, what is in this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
it's rigid with sharp corners.
Yep.
Taking out eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have some mass market games where they have cutouts and weird shapes and stuff like that. But, you know, we'll get into that. So first, let's talk about giving gifts to our family members that don't play games. Mm. You know, they're basically, these are very casual gamers at best. The only times they're playing games is if somebody else ropes them into it. Attention span for learning rules is not that great for whatever reason. Either they're not overly interested or there's too much going on. What do we think are some game suggestions
for that? First of all, why were you looking at me the whole time you were saying that?
So you eventually picked it up. I'm just saying. When I told him all the rules were on the cards, he's like, okay, this is my favorite feature about this game.
What's my favorite feature about it? Am I alone?
It was a great feature of the game. So I still would not recommend terraforming Mars as a holiday gift.
I mean, unless it's to a serious gamer.
Yeah. Right.
Who you know doesn't already own it. Yeah. Right. That's my real problem.
So it's the family member who's not a gamer at all.
That's the level we're talking right now. Mm. Yep.
Well, then why even giving a board game?
Well, you want to get them into the hobby.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
It's a good intro game.
Yeah, right. I mean, party games are always a go-to for me in that situation, just because I know we can immediately all play it and have fun, and there's not going to be too many rules to memorize, and it's very social. Because normally you're giving these games at some sort of big holiday event, you know, be it Thanksgiving or Christmas.
So what is the specific couple games that you were thinking?
Well, party games. I really liked Cranium growing up. That was a great one where you've got it's kind of like a much more developed charades where you've got a picture drawing round, you've got like a Play-Doh round, and you're trying to in teams guess these things coming out with cards. Not explaining it very well, but it was good fun.
I had a hard time getting my family to play Cranium with me.
Is it?
I think I was just too excited about it.
Oh, what?
And they are very contrary people. And they were like, well, if you like it, then I don't know.
So what was a game you were able to get to play with them?
They're really big on fast, quick, sit down and learn the rules really quick games. Mm. So my mom found this game last year. I think it just at Target picked it up, called Tenzi.
Okay.
And it is, everyone has 10 dice of their own color, and it's kind of like a Bunko or Yahtzee style game where everyone throws their dice on the table and you try to keep it so you get this all the same in the one number. Mm. But it has lots of mini games within it. So we sat and we played each of the games. There's one where you try to stack your dice. Like when you roll them, the number you're looking for, you stack them up into a tower. There's one where everyone tries to roll for the same number. There's one for whatever number you feel like rolling for, you get to get. And that one, my mom actually went out and bought like an expansion set with more colors of dice so more people can play at the table, because we didn't have enough for everyone in our family.
So you had to play more. Spencer, do you have a game that like you would either use to introduce or someone has given you where you're like, oh, I really like this game? Or not?
Spades. I really like playing cards.
So, and giving a deck of cards is not out of the realm of possibilities. Right.
Mm-hmm. Especially if they don't have a deck
of cards. But most people already have a deck of cards.
That's true. Settlers? I mean, that's pretty widespread, in the gamer community. But I mean, I remember in high school when somebody, to date myself, somebody introduced me to Settlers of Catan. And like, I'd never heard of this game before. They said, oh, come by my house. Let's play this game. I was like, I don't know. And then I just became enraptured with it. I just loved the game. And, for a while, that was the game that I would push on people and I would teach them and kind of rope them into playing. Mm.
So how did you bring new players into that? Because Settlers is, you know, the quintessential gateway game. That and Ticket to Ride, which are both, if you were getting a game for somebody, Settlers or Ticket to Ride are great games to get, with the asterisk next to it is you have to be willing to play and teach it. Mm-hmm. So a lot, if you're like a really hardcore gamer, you might be like, I've played Settlers too much, I played Ticket to Ride too much, or something along those lines, or even Pandemic actually falls into those categories as well. You have to be willing to play it. But I'm curious, like, so how did you bring in a new player into Settlers? Like, what would your approach be there?
Well, I never really got sick of playing Settlers. I could play Settlers all the time. And I think the sort of genuine enthusiasm that I had talking about it, really got people interested.
Okay. We even got your mom to play one time.
I did, and that was a mistake.
Why was that a mistake?
She's very flighty. It's hard to keep her at a table.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But that's important to think about when you're giving games for the holidays.
Right.
So Settlers, you really need three or four people that are willing to sit down and play that game with you.
Mm-hmm. I think I also push the idea that the rules aren't too complicated. That's a lot of fun that I can walk them through it, you know, like, so it's not scary, right?
Yeah. Right.
It's not going to take that long and that you're probably going to enjoy it.
Yep.
That's cool. How long does a Settlers normally take, would you say?
It can take about, it's probably 1.5 to 2 hours for new players. If you were to play it with, you know, experienced people that know how to play, you can finish a game of Settlers in under an hour.
Wow.
But everyone needs to know what's going on.
Hold up, Josh, have you never played Settlers?
I've never played Settlers.
Hey.
What?
I got this game that I think you know. it's a lot of fun. It's cooperative. You got to like sort of trade. There's no real like sort of aggro there, but it is competitive at the same time.
Right. I have seen a few videos on it, and I feel like the robber thing adds a little bit of competitive element in there.
Oh, it's mm-hmm. it's definitely competitive.
It's very competitive. I would say that's the most aggressive you can get. Mm. But even there, you're not taking away. You're just blocking.
Yeah. The social game, not a cooperative game.
Right.
Yeah. Where like that game that I didn't like, Cosmic Encounters. Yeah, where part of the game is you have to negotiate and deal with other people.
Oh, yeah, it's now forcing you to interact. Yeah.
Now, we do this a lot, but I'm going to do it here again. I'm going to reference Monopoly.
Yeah.
The negotiation that happens in Settlers is very similar to the negotiation that happens in Monopoly. Mm. On your turn, you can make deals with anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this interaction with other players. And I think that's one of the more interesting elements of Monopoly is that being able to make those deals.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make the deal of like, okay, you give me a brick for a sheep and I will not build that road in that direction.
Yeah.
It's a non-binding deal short of the trade. Mm-hmm. But next turn, if you want to build a road, or even that turn, you can build the road if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing as that you would have if you were negotiating Monopoly.
Your word is only as good as your honor.
Yeah. Wow. But I want to go back to dice games because I think dice games
like
are...
Yahtzee?
Not Yahtzee.
Chris really hates Yahtzee.
I thought you liked Yahtzee.
I am trying
What not... was that game you had me play that was just like Yahtzee?
Yahtzee. Which,
you guys remember, right? What
was that the game was called Role Player. It was nothing like Yahtzee.
Well, then how do you know that's what I was talking about?
The point I'm trying to get at is I'm trying to come up with suggestions that are not mainstream or mass market games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's two dice games that I think are really good. One is Liar's Dice. Mm-hmm. Liar's Dice is incredibly casual. You have five dice in a cup, and you roll the dice in the cup, and you put the dice upside down. The cup is covering them, and then you peek under the cup, and you see how many dice you have or what the dice results you have. And you will say something like, I have two twos. And the next person goes and says, well, I have three twos. And the next person will say, well, I have three threes. So you have to either increase the number or increase the dice. And at some point you say, I think you're lying. Mm. And you show. Now you can know the only thing that you're not just bidding on what you have. You're bidding on what the entire table has. So if I say I have two twos and the person next to me has five twos, they can say, oh, well, I think there's seven twos. You know, and I'm like, no way. I call your bluff. And they show and they like, oh, crap. But if I had lied about my two twos and there were five twos were the only thing on there, then ultimately, if they win, I lose a die. If they lose, they lose a die. And when you're down to no dice left, you're out of the game and you keep playing. Mm-hmm. Very simple game to play. Lots of fun. Lots of interaction with people.
And that's the key there, I think, is that interaction thing. That's why I mentioned party games early, is because I really like in those settings while you're there at Christmas or Thanksgiving to be playing a game that we're all interacting and being social with.
Yep.
And, you know, game, even like charades, there was a last convention we went to, there was like a new spin on charades. It's called God Hates Charades, right? Yep. And the genius about that one was that it's a bit like Cards Against Humanity. You get a deck of cards and each of them is a suggestion of the thing that you should act out. So normally charades can be a bit boring if people's imaginations aren't wild enough, but these are like so crazy and wild and kind of scandalous that hilarity always ensues at every single round. Yep. So that's a good one.
Yep.
Back to dice games. I remembered Dicecapades.
Okay.
Dicecapades is a box. I don't remember how many dice are. It's got to be like almost 100 dice. You have all different side numbers, all different shapes, all different sizes. And it is, there are some, it's like almost mini games that you play with the dice. I don't remember exactly how it works that you come up with them, but like some of them are dexterity where you have to stack the dice. Some of them you're going to have to roll and do something off a card. I remember I ended up doing push-ups during this game one time. I was babysitting, and the girl I was babysitting for was telling me that my form was poor and that my push-ups did not count for this game. And I was I'm the adult. but that one's really, really fun. Really good for families. Yeah. That it's one that works for kids and adults together.
There's another one out relatively recent called Fuse. And this is, you have a number of cards in the middle that are trying to get you to roll dice. They're different colors, different numbers. Sometimes you have to stack them up. And there's a cooperative game. So you have to complete a certain number of cards in under 10 minutes. And you're all working together to do this. You know, so this is another kind of interesting thing. You mentioned Cards Against Humanity. Mm. And I think there's a lot of people out there love Cards Against Humanity.
Sure.
Like me. It's a great game.
Yeah, I think it's funny.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm not one of them.
Right.
To me, it's just an exercise in... It really usually takes too long because Cards Against Humanity scales to as many people as you have in the room, except it really doesn't. It just involves you waiting forever. And if you're actually playing the points and you have 15 people playing...
Nobody ever does that, though.
Yeah, you're never going to finish. Codenames, I think, is a much better medium-sized group. So we'll say anywhere from 4 to 10 people to play than Cards Against Humanity. And there's now, at Target exclusive, an adult version of Codenames. So it's a black box Codenames, gets you all of the Cards Against Humanity humor in there, but with an actual... fun team-based game.
So why is that more fun than Cards Against Humanity?
Because Cards Against Humanity is a tedious
game. So that's tedious.
You have to sit there and wait for everyone to take
it. But then what is it about Codenames that goes against that, makes it better?
Everyone's involved all the time.
Right.
So in Codenames, if you haven't played, you have two teams, and you have a team captain's. Basically, they're the clue givers. There's a 5 by 5, giving you a total of 25 cards, grid. And you have a card as the code giver and the both team members, and they can both leaders of each team. They're looking at the same card. And there's red cards and blue cards, and there's a black card. You want your team to guess all of your color cards. Before the other team guesses theirs, and you don't want your team to guess the black card because they'll automatically lose.
And so on these cards you're looking at, there's like one single word.
There's one single word, right. You know, so it'll say like, you know, moose and envelope and vacuum and whatever the case is. Okay. Your job as the clue giver is to give a single word and then a number. That word, in theory, describes more than one of the clues that you're supposed to get the team to guess. The number is how many clues you think are associated with that particular number or that particular clue. And that's all you're allowed to do as the clue giver. One word, one number. Then hilarity ensues as people are trying to guess, like, I think he meant this when he said, you know, furry. You know, it's like, I don't know. This person could, that's conventions. There's a lot of furries at conventions. It could be that. Right. And just watching people.
And there is a lot of discussion then built on that amongst the team about which ones are we going to go for.
And the other team trying to dissuade them. Yep. No, it's not that. Yeah. Orange and banana is not what they meant when they said fruit. That's too obvious, you know, and you really get the kind of fun back and forth.
Right. Yep. So the adult version has a lot of words that are just typical normal words, but as soon as you put that in the adult context,
it's cherry.
Like cherry and balls and, you know, where it's like, these are normal, just innocent words.
Yeah.
And then you throw them all on the table and it's like, woo.
Yeah, call it adult and you're like, wait a minute. There are a few cards in there that if you had like a more conservative family, you could probably remove 12 cards and you would still have this undertone to it with no like real
vulgarity
to it. But if you like Cards Against Humanity, Codenames is like adult Codenames is perfect.
Yeah.
There's also Picture Codenames, which works really well with kids because now you don't have to worry about the reading part. Everything's like little cute drawings and then you still the same thing, give a clue. And give a number.
That's great.
So,
I think another good sort of helpful gateway tool into board games can be the way it's sort of skinned or branded.
Yeah.
You know, if you, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are wild about, say, everything Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So maybe they're not that into board games, but they love everything Harry Potter. So you get a Harry Potter board game, and they're like, oh, I finally got a guess one.
That's actually an amazing, good point. And I'm shocked it came from Spencer.
I know.
Hey. Now, I need to follow up with that is, I think, a tactic that I've noticed people have used when giving gifts to me. And I can tell you firsthand, it kind of backfires, because there's a lot of times that I've received gifts like this where it's like, oh, well, this is, you know, it has something to do with a thing that you like. I'm like, yeah, but I don't like this thing.
But well, to that thing, though, like Harry Potter's a big one. Yeah. They now have a Harry Potter deck building game, Battle at Hogwarts, which is available in pretty much every mass market store.
Yeah.
It would make an amazing gift to kids pretty much 8 and up. And it's also an amazing gateway game into more hardcore deck building.
I was going to say, things. It's a really fun deck builder. It's a cooperative one. So yep. It's really fun to play together. Because I know that I come from a family of piece throwers. Sometimes Christmas ends in tears when somebody does not win the game.
Yep. Always.
It's me.
Christmas always ends in tears.
It was me.
Sometimes
I didn't
it
win.
Begins in tears. Usually tears bookend the holiday.
Spencer loves going to my family for the holidays.
Well, to go the opposite of that, because I agree with Spencer completely. Like, themed games are a great way to get people into the hobby, especially if it's something that you like. Star Trek Catan. So if somebody's not really into board games, and even Catan's not something they'd like, but, oh, well, we could play Star Trek Catan, and you just silently remove the special cards that make it added something to it, and you're playing exactly Catan, but now you have spaceships, people are willing to play it. But the opposite is also true. So a great game that I would recommend anybody give to anyone is called Splendor. However, if you look at this game, it's basically kind of Middle Eastern gem collecting. It is an amazing game, easy to teach. I've not met anyone who hasn't liked this game. There's some skill involved, but it's mostly luck. So it's hidden luck. You don't realize the luck in there because you can play it four different times with four, and every single time someone different will win.
Right.
You know, but everyone feels like they have that chance of winning.
Right.
They have some really heavy poker chips that come with it as the resources. So it's fun and tactile to feel. The setup is shuffle three different colored decks of cards and then just put them out four in front of each in a row. It's that easy to do. If you haven't played Splendor, looking at the game, you might not see how fun it is. Playing the game, you'll want to play it again and again.
That's a pretty, that's a glowing recommendation.
Oh, yeah. I can't recommend it highly enough. I've played it with my parents, who are not major gamers at all. We played it with Sydney's parents, which they are more open to games. But in both situations, like, we're like, okay, what are we going to do with our parents for multiple hours while we're either visiting or, you know, hanging out in the hotel or something? It's like, oh, well, let's pull out Splendor. And it just is a great time passer. And it's fun to see your mom's like, oh, let's play this again. Like, all right. And it's not Monopoly. Yeah, I'll do that again.
So would you go so far as to say that if there can only be one board game on your holiday shopping list, it should be Splendor?
No. I would have to really ponder that question.
I mean, it's tough because
that's what I was hearing.
Yeah.
It's normally contextual really? To the people involved. You know, it's like, what's the right game for this group? Because when you were talking about co-op games before, I realized that's a great game for a mixed ability group.
Yep.
Because then the stronger people can help the weaker people to understand the game as they play.
Or gang up and crush them.
Well, you don't do that in a co-op game.
You crush people in co-op games? How do you even do that?
I find a way.
Oh, wow. I need to play a co-op game with you.
We have been.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Pandemic Legacy.
Yeah.
He's just secretly biding his time. He's a mole.
Waiting. He's like, I'm just waiting till December, and then it'll be the world is mine.
We're really relying.
Secret trader card.
We're really relying on your role at the moment as well. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But the co-op is great. So we should mention Pandemic. Pandemic would be a game I would recommend. And there's a lot of expansions to Pandemic. Stick with the base one to start with, and then ease the expansions in over other holiday gift-giving times.
My only concern about Pandemic is it is a lot of
fiddly bits.
Little bits. Yeah. If somebody is turned off by little teeny pieces, it is quite the, yep. like, you look at all those little cubes and you're like, whoa. Yep.
But now let's segue into the next group. So now we're not the people who don't play games at all. Mm-hmm. Now we're to the Monopoly, Yahtzee, Sari, the mass market games. Mm-hmm. The games that we would give those kind of people, I think Pandemic
definitely
falls right into that. I think Catan falls into that.
Yeah.
You know, these are Ticket to Ride is another one that falls into that. These are mm-hmm. gateway games to say, okay, you've played Monopoly. You're willing to sit down at a table and play mm-hmm. a game mm-hmm. that's going to take you more than an hour and a half, two hours. Let's take it to the next level. Mm. And I do want to just go back real quick to the Splendor. The reason why I wouldn't say it's the go-to game is the theme. When I look at the box, I'm not excited about it. I wouldn't necessarily have opened it up if someone didn't teach me the game before. Mm. And like, okay, this is really addictive.
So you think that's a key thing? You need to teach them and play with them.
I think when you're giving a gift, when you open it up, it's about presentation. Mm. The box should really kind of like, oh man, I want to play this game.
This looks so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. You know, which is a little bit like even Catan, the box is not that great to look at. But again, that's why we go back to you have to be willing to teach the games mm-hmm. that you give. So we mentioned the big ones, you know, the big three, Pandemic, Catan, Ticket to Ride. Can you guys think of anything else that takes you from Monopoly to the next level?
I don't know. This one might be a bit more complicated. This mm-hmm. might be a better one for someone who's a little bit more experienced. But Above and Below was a really fun one. Somebody who's willing to sit and play for a while. Spencer, I don't think you were there that day we played this one.
Nope.
But it has a lot of really fun storytelling bits to it.
Mm. Yeah. It is a storytelling game. There is a decent amount of setup and rules to it. Yeah. So if you're going to give Above and Below, I would recommend probably tween to early teen. Because I think that's kind of the age group that could really get into it.
14 up, really.
Yep. And be willing to play it with them and teach them with it. Because that... there's something that someone could get addicted mm-hmm. to and like, oh, I want to play that again. I want to play that mm-hmm. again. The story is kind of cool there.
Yeah, it's really fun. But yeah, I think it took me really a whole run through of that game before I felt like I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we finished that game and I was like, all right, let's do it again. Like, I want to read more of these little story bits. I want to make more decisions. I feel like I figured this out now. Yeah. And we haven't played it since.
Yeah. Well, we can certainly play it again. More than happy to do it. I think another one I was thinking kind of that next level is maybe Roll for the Galaxy. Not Race for the Galaxy. Mm. Race for the Galaxy, I've tried to learn to play it. It requires a PhD to get through the rules and iconography.
Oh my goodness.
Roll for the Galaxy uses actually very similar iconography, but for some reason it's a lot easier. Lots of custom dice. Tons and tons of custom dice. And you can play... I believe it plays up to 5, and most of it's simultaneous play. But again, it's another one of those games where you're going to have to teach a little bit before people
get into it. There are a few rules to get your head around.
Yeah, but it's a very tactile game as well. It's very kind of fun to get it out there. It may not be good if you have a bunch of 3-year-olds running around, though.
Right. Speaking of tactile games, actually, even though it's not really a gateway section of games, I think dexterity games are great as gifts for people who aren't gamers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I mean, it's just like, you know, it's very intuitive, a lot of them. And they also have that, like, gorgeous-looking factor of, ooh, that looks cool. I want to play around with that and touch it.
Yeah. Like, and going beyond Jenga, you know, that's kind of mm-hmm. the quintessential one. Flick 'em Up is a really, really good dexterity game. Comes mm-hmm. in a wooden box. It has wooden cowboys. It has cardboard, like, house or, like, taverns and, like... churches and whatever, and it's good guys versus bad guys, and you're flicking little basically wood bullets at each other trying to knock the hats off of their cowboys. It really allows you to, like, you set it up on any table, and it scales very big too. You can have like 5-on-5, you know, you just kind of alternate who's taking turns, so you just represent your team. So that's a really good dexterity game.
Sounds great.
Suspend is my go-to dexterity game. It is we've got like different size wire sticks that you balance on top of each other, and it makes this very weird looking wiry jigsaw kind of stack, and it's really fun.
So do you have to, you're trying to hook things onto something and build them up? Or are you taking things away?
So it's a tall one stick with like a hook. It almost looks kind of like a banana stand. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. And then you have three different sizes. There's ones with three notches on a side. There's ones with two notches on a side and ones with one notch on a side. And they've got kind of rubbery, grippy ends. Mm. So you balance them. You start with the one in the hook.
Yeah.
And then you balance your pieces on the different notches on the other people's pieces. And it's kind of like almost Jenga-like where you're building it to the point where it's going to fall.
Yeah.
Right. That sounds cool. Yeah, it's just, they're so easy to pick up and they're so, mm-hmm. you know, again, for very young children, it'd be great to have them involved as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A couple other games that are for bigger groups. A really good game came out a couple years ago called Spyfall. Mm-hmm. This is a game where everyone's given a card and one of the cards has the word spy on it. And all of the other cards has a picture of a location and it's the same location for everyone. Mm-hmm. And you start asking each other questions, which are, you know, like, what is the weather like? And Josh might answer, well, it's sunny here. So now I know you're either the beast location or an outdoor location or something like that. Mm. You want to give enough information for the people who know the location, trust that you know the location, but not enough that the spy can figure out what the location is. Mm. Because at any point, the spy can say, I know the location, it's the beach. And if that's true, the spy wins. Mm. It's a timed game. So after anywhere from 3 to 8 minutes, you put a timer on it and then you accuse who you think the spy is. And if it's unanimous, like, yes, we think that's the spy and it is the spy, then the good guys win. Otherwise, the spy wins. And the spy, again, even during the final, they can kind of stop and say, I think this is the thing. Really fun game. It takes a little bit setting up because you have to like open up all these cards, split them all out, put them in a little plastic baggies, put a spy card in each one of them. And then you shuffle these plastic baggies and then you open it up, take it out without looking at the cards. So nobody knows what it is as you deal it out. Really fun game though. Good for party games. Scales pretty well. I think it goes up to like 10 on the box, but you could even go, actually you couldn't go bigger than that because you don't have more cards than that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good one to do. I always, you know, Werewolf is a great one. Ultimate Werewolf is in a small box and it's very easy to teach. Works great for bigger groups, especially for families that want to be social.
Especially because that one seems to have like a narrator who gives you all the instructions. Yeah. Like,
well, actually, so you're talking One Night Werewolf.
Oh, that's what
which
I'm talking
is
about.
Even a better game than Ultimate Werewolf.
Yeah.
So Ultimate Werewolf is just Werewolf with some extra rules in it.
Okay.
But One Night Werewolf, which could also be One Night Vampire, could be Daylight, could be now it's One Night Alien is another one. So there's a whole bunch of games.
But they're all social deduction games based on the werewolf idea.
They're not social deduction. And that's what makes them great. The One Night game.
It does sound great.
So Kitty, have you played the One Night games?
I believe I did one round of One Night Werewolf, but I don't remember it very well.
So everyone gets basically a cardboard card that goes in front of them. And they're really thick, hardy cards, so it's easy to pick up and manipulate. And you see your roll and you put it down. And that is your roll before you go to sleep for that one night. Mm. There are three cards in the middle. And there's an app that like will narrate the night for you. Mm-hmm. Everybody wakes up and does whatever their roll basically says. And everyone... There's a few non-special roles where someone doesn't do anything, but you could it doesn't necessarily have to happen. Everyone could have a special
role. You don't have to know exactly what all the role does because the narrator is going to say, okay, Carpenter, wake up and do this, and tells you exactly what you need to do in that moment.
Exactly.
What does the Carpenter do?
The Carpenter doesn't actually do anything because he doesn't exist. But the Tanner is a great one,
right.
Who also doesn't do anything. He just wants to be killed.
I want there to be a Carpenter now.
We're going to create a
Carpenter. I feel like there could be. I think you don't remember. I think there's totally a Carpenter. So. He comes up and like... That's an amazing, like,
he builds chair. The scaffolding.
Yeah. Exactly.
So Spencer says the Tanner wants to be killed. The story behind it is the Tanner's life is so miserable that he just wants to die. So he wins if he can convince people that he's a wolf, so you should kill him. Mm. And then if he dies, he's the only one that wins. So the wolves and the villagers all lose.
Right.
So,
but the sense was he just to go jump off a cliff or something.
Well, he still has like this whole self-preservation thing.
Apparently not, because he's scrambling to get other people to come kill him.
It's also a game.
Isn't that an episode of Futurama?
I need my game to make sense.
Where the professor has the Yeti disease, and he wants to be killed. And they have, but they have to surprise him, and they create that elaborate Rube Goldberg death machine.
This does sound familiar. Is this the first time that you've quoted Futurama on the podcast?
If it's the first time, then that's weird.
It is weird.
Because it's like my favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, this game, besides Futurama, and actually we should do One Night Futurama, make all the Futurama tokens out of it.
But characters do kind of lend themselves to that kind of...
But to get to the finish of this game, after everyone wakes up, you don't know what card is in front of you, and you're not allowed to look. Mm. Unless you're the Insomniac, that person has a special role where they can look at their card when they wake up. But you don't know what your card is, and now you have to try to figure out who the bad guys are, based on who may have done what, who's claiming what roles. And the more you get to know the roles, the easier it is to play with people's minds. So it's not truly social deduction in the you have a hidden role that you're defending, because you don't know. There's a logic puzzle involved, too, in trying to figure out who knows what and putting all the pieces together.
It sounds like more purely social deduction.
I think
less information. I think it's more deduction,
less social. No, because like no one knows.
Yeah, nobody knows for sure. You know, so you can come off like one of the things is the troublemaker who switches two roles. I can come out as a troublemaker and say I switched the role of Spencer and Josh. Mm. Now I'm waiting for like Josh. Oh well, I know I was a wolf when I went to sleep, so Spencer's the wolf now. So we should vote him. I'm like, well, I'm not really the troublemaker. I'm just making trouble because I didn't switch the thing. So now I know that Josh is a wolf.
Yeah.
You know, so those are the kind of conversations that can happen in this game. And they're really short. They're 10 minutes and you're done.
Yeah.
So they're
kind of... Whereas a full werewolf game can take hours.
Hours, right. Yeah. And a lot of the times you can even do 5 minutes. Mm. So speaking of 5 minutes, we have about 5 minutes left on the show. Nice. let's see.
I have one more game I want to talk about. Yes. It is a favorite in my family. It's a great game that Spencer hates. It is called Pass the Pigs, and it is
a terrible game.
A Yahtzee-style game, but instead of dice, you have pigs.
I think Chris and I can unite on hating this game.
I love this game. I don't know why I love it, but you have your little like boxes that you try to fill in with your score by throwing the pigs on the table, and you try to get them to like stand on their heads or like... land on their backs, land standing up.
Game.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, the game's been around since the early 80s.
Right. Yeah, we just got given a copy like recently.
Yep.
It's really fun. It's a good one for kids because it's very simple rules. There's only like 6 positions the pigs can possibly land in. And they can chuck
pigs around.
And you just throw pigs around and it's so much fun. And you, I don't know, I'm not sure that, because my family's not very great at score keeping. I'm not sure we ever kept score. When we play heads up, we don't play on teams. We just all shout at each other.
Mm.
But yeah, it's really fun. It's always been my favorite holiday game. It gets pulled out at my parents' house quite a bit. Spencer leaves the room.
Oh, it is a bunch of pink pigs. I watch
football in the other room.
Yeah. You watch a different kind of pig.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, still throwing.
Yeah. So I think a few other games that's worth mentioning. King of Tokyo is a really good one. Mm-hmm. Very simple. I think we have a theme here, which is if there are a bunch of dice or a cup that you roll things in, this makes for a good holiday gift.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... from what we're sounding like.
I don't agree with that.
For gamers, I think Deception is a really good one.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
That's a really fun one that we've enjoyed this year. It's a bit
like Clue, but much better.
Yeah, Deception, Murder at Hong Kong. We've talked about it before. Look it up if you haven't heard about it, but it's a really, really good quick clue with a touch of social deduction in it.
Mm.
But mostly it's just trying to figure out who the murderer is.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
I don't know. We're all just looking at your wall of games. At my collection over
there. I mean,
so a great game that I haven't played in a while, but I always thought was a lot of fun, and I think is a good bridge for a certain type of gamer.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Order of the Stick board game? Have you ever played that?
I have.
I've not played that.
I think it's hilarious. It's a lot of fun, and it's so for anyone who's not familiar, the Order of the Stick is a web comic.
Yep.
That's about like Dungeons and Dragons.
Right.
Yep.
So the board game is great because if you're either someone who played Dungeons and Dragons, or you're someone who's familiar with the webcomic, or you just like sort of silly things.
Mm.
So anyone in at least one of those three camps is probably going to like the game. And it's sort of a, I don't want to call it a deck building game.
It's a dungeon building game where you use cards to build the dungeon.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So the map of the dungeon sort of builds as you go. Everyone sort of plays a character and you're sort of building and gathering things.
Has a very role-playing feel. You have your different characters. You've got like the wizard and
But everything's very fighter. Sort of silly and lighthearted.
Yep.
And the mechanics really aren't very complicated as I remember. So I think that's a good game for, again, sort of crossing the different interests.
Yep. You might have a hard time finding it, but if you can find it, it's worth having. I will say that you should get the expansions with it. The base game by itself with the basic rules, the game runs about 3 to 4 hours. With the expansion, there are ways of cutting the time in half. Mm. So they're like speeds up the gameplay, but you still capture all the Order of the Stick humor and stuff to it. Because it really is like the humor is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And if you don't buy the game, you could buy the webcomic in print form and give that as a gift. And that would be amazing as well.
Mm-hmm. So to kind of summarize all these types of games, I mean, it seems like a common thread that's running through is that they should be fairly easy to understand, you know, few rules, easy to play, and maybe on the short side as well.
Yep.
But then for the ones that are a bit more complicated, you should definitely kind of play it with them and teach them.
I think you should play any game you give with them.
Mm.
Like as soon as they open it, play the game. If you are, and my parents and aunts and uncles and stuff used to do this, you know, give a game to the kids. Mm. That works if you're giving something like, you know, especially, I mean, being a boy, when I was in the age range of like 7 to 12, any game you gave me, I was going to be the most important thing we have to do right now. I was going to find someone to learn it.
Right.
But I think if you're a gamer trying to get non-gamers into the hobby, you should try to get games that you want to play with them.
I think another great thing to do there too, if you're really concerned with it being a successful gift, is play it with them before you give it as a gift.
Yeah.
And see if they enjoy it. I think, and this goes beyond just buying games, but for me, the way I approach buying gifts for people is it seems kind of straightforward, but I think it's important to remember that you should be buying something that they will like, not something that you wish they will like.
Oh, that's a silly rule. Maybe valid though. Maybe.
And I think the best gifts, you know, are both, right? Yep. It's something that you want them to like and that they will actually like it. But you've got to really put that little extra thought into there of like, okay, do I really just want them to like this?
Yeah.
Or is so-and-so going to actually get into this thing? So I think, you know, thinking about what their interests are, the games that they like, and playing with them ahead of time.
Yeah.
Please don't get us One Night Werewolf.
Fine. Do not do that.
I wouldn't get you guys any games anyway, because I would just get them for myself and say, hey, come on down and play this game with
me. That's true. Yeah.
But any other final thoughts before we go out?
I'm all good.
No.
All right. Well, hopefully this gave you some insight into our thoughts on buying gifts. I will say that I'm going to be buying a couple copies of Pyramid Arcade and giving those away as gifts. I know we mentioned at the very beginning, I mentioned about Thanksgiving. It's worth mentioning on the show that it is going to make a good gift for a lot of different people because there are so many games in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, I think... honestly, that's the one I'm going to be giving away this holiday more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little pricey, though. It's $77 a box. So hopefully some of the other ideas kind of bring that down a little bit further.
Nice.
So, all right. Well, Josh, why don't you take us out?
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review and email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. And remember, until December 18th, this will enter you into our holiday contest as well. You can reach us directly on Twitter. I'm at Josh's Blonde. Chris is at Game Master Chris. And Kitty is at Kittenel. Please give us a like or share on Facebook or Google+. And of course, you can leave us a post as well. And as always, we'd like to thank Tristan Dunman for our cover art. She can be reached on Twitter at Tristan Dunmill. So until next week, when we talk about point salad games, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.